Hi, my name is Kiefer Sutherland. I play Jack Bauer.
And my name is John Cassar, and I directed this 2 hour.
And I'm Howard Gordon, and I wrote it.
I think the first comment I wanted to make was this was just one of the most beautiful scripts that we've had in 8 years. And there was something, just because of the distance, shooting, the logistics of shooting in South Africa, that we had to have a final script. I mean, one of the things we've always done on 24 is that we are constantly a work in progress. But because of the distance and the time that you had actually to write this script, we went with a script that we just knew you had knocked out of the park.
And, oh, man, thank you.
And
thank
so
you.
For the 3 weeks we were down there, it's just so exciting to actually know how it was going to shape up. And so every time we got a location and any single thing that happened, just because you weren't there at that stage, was so exciting to us.
Well, I got to say also, it's something that I think you, John, and me were on the same page from the very beginning with. And so from my perspective, every moment, everything that I imagined was realized and then some. So my hat's off to both of you.
Well, it was also the first time, and Kiefer and I talked about this too, that we actually had a beginning, middle, and end in such a short time span.
Right, right, right.
And that was interesting from our point of view, because you play everything a little differently, knowing that there's an end.
There's a conclusion.
As opposed to, I always say, 24 is this great show with this, this beginning and this amazing ending and a long middle. And so suddenly we really had it all compacted into 2 hours. So anything we were playing in the first 10 minutes, we knew would affect what was going to happen just in the next hour. So
right.
It made it very different in the way we shot it, I think.
Well, I'm really glad that we shot it in South Africa. I know we briefly talked about doing it in Santa Clarita.
Yeah, and I mean, we're always dealing with budget. We are in television, and one of the things we thought about doing was shooting, I think 3 days there was our original plan.
That's right.
3 days that would say we were in Africa. And then when we went down to scout it, I myself and Michael Click and Joseph Hodges went down, we realized, we should do the whole thing here. And you helped us at Fox, and Fox were nice enough to actually say yes, and we figured out the money and we went. So
yeah.
It was great.
Well, and this scene explains exactly why you had to shoot this in Africa.
Yeah.
And it's not that this set couldn't have been built anywhere.
That's exactly right.
Look at these faces.
Faces, yeah.
Listen to the language.
Yeah, that's what it is.
You can't fake that on this kind of a scale. You just can't.
And these are all, everyone you see in this scene is a local South African actor. Hakim, who is an African actor who now works here in Hollywood, who plays Dubaku, is here in Hollywood, but he was also African. So basically, there it is. The tapestry of Africa is right here in the very first scene.
One of the things this reminds me, too, of is that we had the benefit of having had a couple of episodes, 8 of them, written and shot. And so what we were able to do is reverse engineer a story that I think ultimately has enhanced the main part of the season phenomenally. Africa was this thing that was talked about in presidential circles, and now the audience gets to experience Africa firsthand, and particularly this scene, which is a very hard scene.
Yeah, it's a very controversial scene, but I think it's very important to sort of flavor with the rest of this show. I think it informs the rest of the show. Almost every scene from here on in relates back to this one scene. I think, Kiefer, every time you're talking about saving the children, you actually see why.
It.
You see the brutality of it, and you can look at it and say it's television. It's an exaggeration, but if you've seen any of the documentaries of what's happening in these places, it's not an exaggeration whatsoever.
From Rwanda to Zimbabwe to Darfur, down the line, it's one of the great benefits of this show is that we've been able to tackle things that are happening in the real world.
Yeah, when they're happening, which is now. One of the stats that came out was that 1 in every 10 soldiers fighting in the world right now is a child. And that's an awful, awful percentage. And so to shine a little bit of a spotlight on it and have people aware of it is, I think, good.
Well, when you think 250,000 soldiers are deployed by the United States that are over 18, pulling 1 out of 10 of those and putting a 13-year-old in those boots.
Yeah, it's pretty scary. And, of course, now you get to see why we went to Africa for shots like this. And eventually the school that we're at is a very unique sort of location, although not our favorite place in the world just because of the weather. But otherwise, it looked beautiful. Even the cows look African to me. I don't know.
But you need another player.
Find somebody else.
Who? Tell me, Willie. Who can handle the ball?
And again, this was, you know, the one thing we talked about, and that was, you know, could we find the right, you know, kids actually to play these parts in Africa? And, you know, we talked about that, Howard, whether we had to bring someone from America, and we were, I think, very lucky.
Well, our very first thing they sent, this was the first kid who read for the first person they sent, and we just looked at each other. And I think in that moment, we knew we had a
show.
That
was possible.
Yeah.
Right. And that's this gentleman right here, this little boy.
Sia.
Who, you know, and my biggest worry was that he had so many scenes with you, Kiefer, you know, and just to be at the level of performance that he could get to and needed to for to make this show work.
Well, he really was. Extraordinary. I mean,
what was it like working with him? I mean, was amazing. He intimidated, or was he
no, he was I think it's one of the benefits. I think one of the difficult things of finding a young actor in Los Angeles or New York is they've made the terrible mistake of going to school to learn how to act, and so there's this terrible precocious element to children actors, whereas this boy really just loved acting and performed in school theater and things like that. And so this was really undaunting to him, and he was so natural. And then he also listened unbelievably well.
Yes.
I mean, I would hear John give him a small note, and he would hit it in spades, you know.
Wow. Wow.
Which, again, is very rare for a child of his age, of his, you know, inexperience. I mean, you've also got to know that almost every African actor, every local actor we have in this show, this is the biggest thing they've ever done. There, none of these, you know, people came from another big movie. This was, they're all mostly local theater. I mean, that's, if you look at their resumes, they're local theater. So this is, you know, the highlight of their careers, and they all stepped up.
And have never been on a film, and you have to imagine where we're shooting here, we're in the middle of nowhere, so it's like the circus coming to town.
Oh yeah,
you know, all the trucks, all the crew, everything else, and I was amazed with how grounded not just Sia but all of the children were, and many of them not speaking English, so we had one interpreter speaking six languages.
Yeah.
Wow.
Six different dialects of African languages.
You know, I find this scene is actually very important on so many levels in terms of, you know, this prequel worked, I think, basically to bridge the season between last season and the beginning of this season. I know we all talked about this moment where Jack, who really has kept the world at arm's length and despite himself, is charmed by this kid. This kid is getting under his skin, and it's a really, really key for, I mean, it's such a nuanced line that you drew and that you shot, John, but it's so beautifully communicated to me that despite yourself, despite your awareness that you got to keep people at arm's length, God, because of what might happen if they don't.
Well, but it's also beautifully written in the scene where the kid is just infectious, and he was.
I love this moment.
But there's also great levels too. I think, you know, the addition, I think, that we put in late of you know, catching him stealing the knife just put that other level on it. You know?
Right. Well, he wasn't just some kid who was a little bit mischievous. Yeah.
You know, and I think that's something Jack Bauer liked. I mean, there was something that he appreciated in the fact that this kid was another survivor.
The casting of this was also such a huge factor for me. Bobby Carlyle, I think, is one of the great, great actors of our time. To be able to get him in this part was just such a coup, and for him to agree to do it was such a gift. And then to have Gil Bellows as someone who I've loved his work for a long time, but this was the first time I met him, and he was fantastic. And it was when this cast kind of started to shape together, and every time we would work with someone for the first time, it was this constant feeling like, oh, this is going to be one of those events where all of the right things happen at the right time and come together, as opposed to so many of them that you think, oh, this is going to be fantastic, and it just falls apart. This was inverted.
And Bobby was your first and only, the first time you read it. You said it's Bobby Carlyle.
Yeah, I don't even think we didn't even mention another name. It was already, Bobby was in my head right from, you know, the conception when I first read the script.
And what was our choice, by the way? Was it worth the...
There's a thing he does here.
Yeah, he just did it, where he said, nope.
when he won't take the subpoena.
Yeah, it's great.
And there's a smile, and we had to reshoot this scene because of the wind and because of some weather. And he did it in the first one, and we were all worried that he wouldn't do it in the second. And no one really wanted to say anything to him about it, because that's really, you know, that's his right. craft. That's yeah. where he gets to work. And he knew we all liked it, so he did it.
He was wonderful. And people have to remember, too, although, I mean, you look at this and you think, wow, this is like a feature film. It's nice to say that, but we didn't have feature film time. We still were basically on a television schedule, a little expanded, but not much. So to find all, like Kiefer, what you were saying about, you know, finding these performances and finding the meshing with the children, we didn't have a lot of time to rehearse it, mm-hmm. to figure it out. It was still at the speed that we do our regular television
yeah.
show.
Yeah.
He's wonderful, too, the guy who plays
South Colin. African actor.
Yeah.
And he was amazing. And he literally, again, this was... He stepped in, he added stuff to it. Everybody had an idea of what they wanted to do, what they wanted, you know, out of the part. He was, you know, he knew this was a big job, that people were going to see it. And his only disappointment was that he wasn't playing a great guy.
Right.
And so he would joke around about that. But boy, when it came to playing it, and I was worried when I hear an actor normally start talking about, oh, I don't want to be the bad guy.
Right.
Then they try and justify it somehow in the performance. And he did not do that at all. He went full bore with it. And
Sean Cameron Michael is his name. Wonderful actor. And this gentleman, too, who played Dubaka's brother, is also wonderful. His character name is Yosu, but his name is Zoli. And he did just a great
job. He was
job,
amazing.
You know.
That's the first actor I saw work on this, on the very first day, and we'll come up to it, the rounding up of the children.
Yes, the capturing of the children in the soccer game.
And I saw this guy in the back of a Jeep and jump out and right. round up these children like cattle. And I lit up. My whole body. Oh, I just got so excited because I, you know, it looked so real to me and was so disturbing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And this actor just then did a scene, and I looked at John, and I went, we're off to the races here,
and
I think.
That was virtually our first day. That's our first,
I remember that. That was the first
morning.
That's the first dailies
and
we got.
I might add, in the rain. Absolute pouring rain. Which we should have known right there and then was just an indication of the kind of weather we'd be dealing with.
You know, that wind blowing, though, if you see it in the frame, it gave a kind of drama. It made the frame come alive.
Amazing. And then now this is, this is, again, one of the things I absolutely love about watching this show, this 2 hours, that the contrast, and I think even visually the contrast, but story-wise the contrast was what's happening in Africa and what's happening in Washington, D.C., It's so different. It's so wonderful. It changes. And later on in the piece, you don't expect it. You're in Africa, and then there's that change, and you're back in Washington.
Well, and here's it goes another back casting and forth. Moment. I mean, and you get John Voight. I mean,
yeah,
who I have to just say for those people who are listening to this and may have the season will not have been released yet. John Voight, who will come back, and he is terrific. Yeah, he is perhaps my favorite guest actor that we've ever had.
You can't go wrong. And I think some reporters asked me, you know, was John Voight on your list? And I said, John Voight's on everyone's list.
Yeah.
And he's on the top of our list. Yeah. You know, he's always been on our list. I mean, the
scary thing about
him.
An actor like that is that often you don't even ask because you just don't think you'll get him.
That's right.
And we hit a point with where we were starting to feel so excited about the potential of this piece that we grabbed higher than I think we ever thought we'd get. And so my first day off I'd had in 4 weeks, just got back from South Africa, John Voight's first day, and I think on 3 hours sleep, got in a car, got out to the set, and just kind of got on my knees and said, thank you so much. Thank you so much for doing this.
And he really appreciated it, too, because I actually saw him mention it in a...
Oh, can I say something? He's having a really,
really
good time.
He really is.
He's so into this part.
Well, we owe him at least that.
Yeah. But he's also, again, one of those actors that comes
to
the
game.
Like Kiefer. Exactly like everyone we just saw, you know, including Gil and Bobby.
He's terrific, too.
These guys come to play. They come at 100% ready. And, you know, I'm mentioning it from my point of view as a director. Then you're not just going to get what's on the page. You're going to find that extra layer that, you know, you're going to dig a little deeper. And, you know, you just get a better product because they come so ready. Yeah, this is Chris Lemke. Just absolutely wonderful. Not an easy part. And, again, just in the game from the very beginning. You know, just did a great job for us. you know, playing this kid that was obviously, you know,
in over his head,
way, way over his head. And again, this, the, you know, this storyline is really important in what comes up in the year. It really, you know, feeds into the presidential storyline and the Starkwood storyline.
Here's a familiar actor complaint. It's maybe 45, 50 degrees here, and we're dressed like it's summer.
And
I just watched John Voight put on an overcoat because it's Washington in December. Yeah. And it's maybe 110 outside in California where we shot it. We've never been able to quite get that right.
No. This particular case, I think in my whole career, I've never had one like this. Because, you know, I don't know about you, Kiefer, but the very first thing when I came back from Africa and everyone said, so how hot was it? Was it really, it was so, must have been so hot there. And you say, no, I put on 5 layers every day. And if I got 2 off, I'd be lucky.
Yeah.
Because it was so absolutely freezing because it's their winter.
Right.
And the very first thing, the scene you were mentioning when you came back, the very first thing we did was outside of Washington, the inauguration outside, and here are these people virtually in 110-degree heat standing on these bleachers with these massive overcoats on. So it really was the extreme of that scenario.
You're running away.
What do you want from me, Carl? What do you want?
And this is an interesting scene, too, because it was planned to be shot outside, but we had such bad weather that we moved it into this working shack, and I just like it better.
When I heard you shooting it outside, I was concerned because it was a very intimate moment. I'm glad that weather conspired.
Sometimes, you know, really, and look, it's a moving target when you're making a film, especially when you're dealing with exteriors and weather in a different country. Everything is kind of up for grabs, and this is one of those scenes that worked out, I think, better in the location it ended up being in.
Trying to find a way to make some sense of it all.
You know, it's a wonderful scene.
Especially for people like us.
Yeah, except you found what you were looking for.
Bobby's so great. And I think he enjoyed himself, too. I think it was a good part for him.
I sure hope so, because it was such a gift he gave us.
Yeah. And there's something interesting that happens, too, Kiefer, that you could address a little bit, is the fact that, you know, when you're on location, it becomes a little different, too, because you're spending more time together. You know, and I think that affects a film.
I think... certainly from an actor's perspective, that everybody's not going home to their families.
That's right.
That 100% of your purpose for being wherever you are is solely this project and this film, and all of your energy goes to it. And I think that matters.
And that it's immensely. Finite, too, probably, that it's you're there for
that's another part of it,
a specific amount of time.
Yeah. You know, because I know the time I spent having dinner with the cast and the crew and hanging out together at the end of the day really solidifies you as a unit, and you go out the next day ready to fight it. It's a bit military. You really are becoming, you know, the band of brothers, and you're out there fighting it every day. You know, and we did have weather problems, there's no doubt. And I've got to give it to the South African company that we had there, Moonlighting, who facilitated everything we did. They were wonderful, and they warned us right from the very beginning. And if we had a choice, we probably, you know, wouldn't have gone there. But unfortunately, it was the only window we had as far as time period. So we had to shoot there at that time. But they told us that the weather would be rough because it was winter. But, you know.
Again, I love this scene. In this scene, Bobby's dealing with the mistakes that these kinds of guys have to make.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, our whole story centers around the idea of one person having to make these impossible decisions. 10 people dead, does that justify 100 people living? How do you make that decision? And there are people in this world that have to make decisions like that. And this articulation of making that kind of a mistake... and played so beautifully by Bobby. I mean, it's such a tender moment. There's no anger in it. It's just absolute sorrow and pain. And in a very weird way, he articulates for the audience exactly what Jack's been feeling for years.
Mm-hmm.
And I love doing this with Bobby because there is a real tenderness to this scene, and I think a lot of that came out of the fact that we've known each other for a long time.
Yeah, that's definitely.
And that we weren't...
How do you know him originally?
We weren't scared to take time. We did a film together, which actually is where my daughter met her husband, and I now have a grandson from. And this was, gosh, at least 10 years ago. A film called To End All Wars.
And that was before 24, obviously.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
And that was also a film that, you know, obviously you're in one place all together, tough film about a, you know, prisoner of war camp. So, you know, I'm sure it's the kind of film, again, that you bond.
Sorry, Jack. Me too. Me
too. You know, in this location, too, I wanted it to be idyllic. I wanted it to be, you know, the beautiful part of Africa. Because, you know, Africa is. I mean, there's so much beauty there. It's amazing. And you wanted to see how beautiful this was. And then, obviously, you know, the war rears its ugly head and comes to this beauty and destroys it. But I just want it to be this beautiful place.
Where is he going?
I'm not sure.
But he's leaving.
The other thing, too, Howard, did we... I mean, in a way, this was only one of Jack's adventures, his last one. You almost wanted to feel that between the 2 years he had moved around.
Yeah.
I mean, we sort of, you know, hinted on the fact that he went to India. And
it's very
places.
Specific that he's not settled down in any one of those places.
This young man was wonderful too, playing Thomas.
Mm-hmm.
Just a solid, solid actor. And again, you know, we did minimum takes and it had to be done quickly, and they were all virtually on the game right from the word go. I think here's where you see the wind probably more than any other scene. And again, it's a character. It does become a character in the piece, there's no doubt.
Well, you also start to see how much hairspray was used because the clothes are moving at a rather fast pace compared
more
to
the hair.
And...
Oh, that's funny.
And it was,
this is when I would look at Sia, and I got very jealous about the hairstyle he chose to use in this piece.
And see the kids jumping up and down back there? That's because they're freezing.
I think at one... Yeah, here we go. I think at one point they had a take of Bobby, and he was leaning at about a 40-degree angle.
Just trying to stay
just
up.
Just to try and stay on his mark.
But again, so professional. Just plowing right through it. You know, and you've got to know, too, you know...
Look, it's a hurricane.
Yeah, he's just
is it cold, too, on top of it?
Oh, yeah. Oh, freezing. I mean, you know, again, this is the scene we were talking about. You know, if you look at the ground...
This is the very first day.
You know, it's wet because it's raining. It rained almost all day on us. Luckily, during the day, you can't really see the rain.
Well, I have to say, had it just been sunny and hot, I think it would have been a different piece.
Yes, and I
think,
agree with you.
I think the weather...
You know, and this way is going to be really sunny and beautiful in Washington, D.C. to contrast against the gloomy world of Africa. You know, it's just a little more difficult for us than most shows because we are supposed to be taking place in a 24-hour period. So weather could run havoc to our storytelling if it really starts to become a distraction. But I think we got away with it.
I think we got away with,
you know, the fact that the weather...
But that also matches
different.
What you told me was the truth, that from 1 hour to the next, it's sunny, and then so...
No doubt.
Here it comes. This is what I first saw. This was the very first day I drove up, just as this was being shot. And this was truly frightening.
Yeah, it's funny. There's some scenes that, even though you've designed them, even though I designed them and I picked the wardrobe and, you know, designed the whole scene, even when you see them, they surprise you.
Wow.
They get to a point where you go, wow, that was more real than I even imagined. You know, the way these guys looked and the feel of it all. And again, they're real. You've got to know that these aren't actors that are running around. These children, it's a soccer team that we hired completely as a soccer team. So none of them had been on film before, none of them, except for our hero actors, the children doing the lines. And even the little boy that's coming up, he's just one of the soccer team kids. So this was completely new to them. They'd never done anything like this. But if you see their faces, it's unbelievable work. It really, truly is unbelievable work.
Maybe this acting thing isn't so hard after all.
Yeah.
There's a serious argument to that,
mate. You know, and again, when you're going to a different country, you just don't know. And so you just cross your fingers and hope. But look at these faces.
You will all have the honor of fighting the imperialists until we have taken back our land.
You can kind of see the rain there if you look carefully in the black. In the black of the trees. And just off camera is or you know, five or six.
Well, you can see the rain in the corners, and, yeah, you can see and the they're under a huge tent.
Yeah. Oh, right.
Yeah. We've just put a big white sort of covering on top of them. But just off camera, there's like five, six wardrobe women just waiting to run in and cover the children, you know, to keep them as dry as we can. And this you know, this young man was just off the soccer team. He wasn't even an actor. You know, but look at the face. It's just like, yeah, so, you know, again, and this kind of show can go terribly wrong because there's so many factors that you have no idea. Or like Kiefer said, it was just, I think we knew even here, Kiefer, right away. Mm-hmm. I think this day we started going, you know, we're already on to something here. Right away, we felt good about it.
Well, the fact that there's really not a weak link in any of it or a false note feels.
Yeah, and I think the fact that we shot there was so important, you know, and so important for seeing the faces. And, you know, you'll see later we have some scenes with hundreds of extras, and that would have been very, very difficult to do here.
This was so hard to watch.
Yeah, this is still still a little brutal. And again, it's one of those interesting things we do on 24, the way we shoot it. One of the ways I like to shoot that kind of stuff is there's no blood, there's no bullet holes. It's more about what you think you saw that makes it as violent as it is, and the fact that it's obviously you're shooting children, but there's no blood. There's, you know, it's actually the trees that we just, you know, Stan Blackwell, our effects, you know, genius. It's just the trees that get blown up around them.
I just realized something, and I hope it's not in. But the first female president should not be in the newscast.
Why not?
Because it's...
Look at this, we're fixing it actually as we're doing the commentary. This has got to be a first, I think, for commentary. Well, she's about to
become... Do you have a pen?
She's about to... you don't see this right now, but Howard's writing notes for the editors. And again, even just when you look at this scene, this is the contrast I was talking about. There's, you know, there's almost no color compared to what you see in Africa.
It is, yeah.
It's very... Look at the walls are white. Everything's white. Everything's beige. And either that or it's black. It's black coats. You know, it's very little color. It's you know, we really made an effort to make that contrast really stark, you know. And amazingly enough, I guess it says that there's more life in Africa, even though with the problems they're having, than there was in DC.
One of the challenges, obviously, in writing this thing and obviously in shooting it too, was making Washington resonate with what was happening in Sangala. And the trick is, in, you know, generally, we hear much more closely to sort of some of the conventions of a thriller. And in this case, there's a more tangential relationship to Africa and to Washington. So I'm amazed at how well it turned out.
And it was a bit worrisome because we shot Africa first and we knew what we had in Africa. I think we knew, you know, as we were coming back, it was being cut already. And we had a really good sense of how good it was.
How good Africa was
and
Washington was still
an
unknown.
And then the fear started, you know. And again, we got off on a plane, on a Sunday, you know, after 35 hours of traveling. And virtually the Tuesday, we had one day off and we were right into shooting Washington. So we didn't have a lot of time to think about it. But my fear, of course, was that could now the Washington storyline hold up to what we did in Africa? And I agree with you. I think it does. I think it's a thriller. So I think it helps keep that alive. And it's a great introduction to all of these characters and to Cherry Jones and Colin Fiore playing the president and her husband.
This was something that I think was a tremendous benefit as well to the season, the main part of the season, where we never really understood what the transition of power from season to season. We're always very, very good about understanding how whoever is in that office has gotten to that office, and it wasn't really well understood. And this movie answers that question, and I think introduces us to this president in a way that she's spectacular. I mean, she is just wonderful.
Yeah. Kiefer, you got to work with her a little bit during the year, and
yeah, not a finer actor.
Yeah. Well, again, just look at that shot with those three wonderful actors, Colin Fiore
and
Peter McNichol. I mean, it's easily the best cast I've ever worked with. I think it's just a spectacular cast.
This is also an interesting, you know, people ask, why did you pick a female president? It wasn't for any other reason other than that we've had a bunch of white guys and two black guys. And frankly, what was interesting to us was the idea of power, not just owned by a woman, but power within a relationship between a first gentleman and what that might be like, turning some gender roles on their heads.
And we have to coin the phrase first gentleman because we've never really had to use it in real life before. So it was interesting having to deal with that. And again, bringing Powers Booth back is also wonderful and great for the show.
To defend my country from this monster Juma. And the only way that can happen is if you accelerate military assistance. Your Congress has already...
And again, everything you hear here and all the setup of Sangala really
plays
helps,
out in season in the season.
Really helps inform, you know, inform what happens in season 7. You know, people ask me, do you have to watch the prequel to know what's happening in season 7? My answer usually is no.
No, yeah.
But if you do, you're going to, you know, I think it'll be
a richer experience.
Rich experience to do that. And then the prequel does stand on its own. It was a two-hour movie.
Just outside.
Begging for a sequel.
Begging for a sequel.
Which is the season.
Yeah.
Yeah. And people won't have that long to wait, thank God. Not the wait that they had between season 6 and season 7, so.
I'll do that.
Thank you, sir.
Again, wonderful use of our split screen format. Kind of scenes that really help. Actually, there's a scene coming up here that I don't think made the on-air cut, so we could talk about a little bit about that. And it's a great scene, but, you know, when push comes to shove, you eventually have to hit a time when you're on television, and there are things that have to go.
Well, and that must be such a difficult thing, because you guys really do that. That's your guys.
Yeah.
That
it's
really doesn't
it's the hardest.
Me.
Yeah.
Well, this cut is 96 minutes,
right,
and the air version is 84.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a big difference. Yeah, it's a big difference in the cuts.
And how lucky to have more good material than you can
yes.
use.
Yeah.
But
yes,
it's there. Certainly have been times where we have been straining to fill up something,
yes,
and
that happens
to then
too.
Have to throw something away
and
is
it's
always going to be painful.
It comes in stages. It's not the first round. The first round you can get it down to, you know, somewhere manageable, and you know there is a lot of fat on both sides, on the script and the shooting. But then it's as you get down to the finite last few minutes that's the really difficult part.
I love her strength here.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then I think Powers.
And
is
his
just,
weariness.
Oh, it's just the weariness is like you could feel it in his shoulders and the way he sits. Everything about a president that's just gone through, you know, a couple of tough terms.
No natural resources, no substantial economic ties, nothing that threatens.
And, you know, I was also trying to think of another movie, another television show that ever did this scene. And I couldn't remember one. You know, the one president that's moving out and the other one that's moving in. It felt so unique and different to me. I don't think I've ever...
Not on this scale,
ever
no.
seen it. I've never seen it like that.
The only time where I saw the transition be that kind of one person having strength and the other person being that weak would have been Traffic, when Michael Douglas takes over the post of fighting the drug war.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh,
and
that's
that
right.
guy basically
yes.
said, you want this job, you can have
you can have it.
A world that we are willing to sell out a Democrat.
But this was, I think, just the idea of this. And
I love the placement, John. I remember, one of the few times I ever stepped foot on this on the thing, I remember you actually saying, oh, I like that flag, let's reframe it there.
Yeah. Well,
or a little bit of it, which
again,
you don't always do. But
it's very subtle, you know, some of the things a director does, but you have that ability to play with the blocking. And you know, you talk to the actors about it, and you make it work. So you're saying something in the scene, you know, the fact that he sits on his chair again to still say to her, look,
and you're sitting in this chair. Right?
You're sitting over there. I'm sitting over here. I'm still the boss, you know, just for a few, you know, an hour or so, but I'm still the president here. You know, and then he actually verbalizes that later in the next scene. But just the idea of the blocking is important too. That she's still the guest at this point.
One thing that I think was always a concern to us, or at least something we were aware of, was the fact that the priority here was to locate Jack in the world and to sort of create the story and allow it to breathe. And so this, you know. The Africa part really took its time and takes its time. It's not till, what are we, in minute 35 or 36 before things really start to happen.
Mm-hmm.
In that way,
that was one of the nice things. That's again, back to, you know, what Kiefer and I were talking about earlier, that's where it's different than our usual one hour, you know.
Well, I think I told you guys, I called you, I said, look, before you read this is, think more Western than thriller. And I think that's...
Well, I think you've got that on the other side. You've got that mystery and the thriller, you know, on the other side. And Western, I think, is a good... I've never really, you know, thought of it that way, but it really
is. That's why
I told
the network, I said, guys, this is a much more of an old-fashioned Western.
Yeah, it really feels like a Western. These vultures were interesting. We found out that vultures are dangerous even when you're alive.
They can take your finger like that.
They virtually can.
Will they attack you? I mean,
they will. Yeah, they will.
And they are ugly birds.
I think the perception was always that they don't attack things unless they're dead, but...
The handlers were all missing fingers. Which
missing fingers
a good
and,
sign.
And very big, thick leather gloves. At one point, one of them escaped, and as our crew put their hands down to try to corral them, the guy told us, no, you don't want to do that. You can lose fingers very quickly with these birds. And again, some wonderful makeup work here, you know, by the local crew. We found a very good crew. I mean, there's a crew down there that, you know, does the big features, that did Blood Diamond and did Lord of War, and we got a lot of them. So it was a very strong crew. We did take some people from L.A. With us, but I think probably 3/4 of the crew were from Africa and did a wonderful job. And again, adjusted very quickly. You know, it's one thing to work on those big features with 80-day schedules, but with our, you know, two 3-week schedule, it was, they had to move very quickly, and they did. They moved very quickly for us.
What that boy just did there was really not easy to do, which was rolling your
just
eyes like that,
yeah.
and not being able to focus on anything. And again, just their willingness to jump in and try something that they had not done before.
And then make the adjustments, you know, when I was able to tell them another actor suggested something, they're very quick to make the adjustment. It's amazing.
We can carry your things and work for you.
No.
Why not?
Because you can't.
Look at his face.
I'm going alone.
People who like to be alone are witches, my grandfather says.
Well, there you go.
You know, these scenes too, I think one of the things that's nice about them, I mean, obviously the relationship is so wonderful, but it's such a warm place. That room is just this little cocoon that these two sort of share together. The scenes that they have are always in this real warm, sort of comfortable place compared to the rest of the world. And that's, you know, Rodney did a great job. Rodney Charges, our director of photography, you know, did a wonderful job under very tough conditions.
Ghosts.
My mother, my father, and my 3 sisters.
I mean, you know, this plays kind of blithely, but the fact of the matter is we learn here that this boy's lost his mother, his father, and his 3 sisters, and I think...
Again, not unlike what's happening there every day.
Yeah.
And I want you to do me a favor, as a friend.
This was one of our worst windy days, I think, Kiefer. As sunny as it looks, it was still very
difficult.
You can see
the trees in the background.
Yeah. And people don't realize it's not the problem of your hair blowing around and your clothes blowing around. It's the noise. The noise level, it's like a helicopter. It's like working beside a working helicopter. Because the trees, there's so many trees around there that, you know, at 40 miles an hour winds, those trees become incredibly loud.
And this thing you want to whisper in.
That's right.
The other actor can't hear you.
That really can't hear you from that far away. So it you know, it was a real challenge to...
Oh, and look at this.
Look at
this. He was so beautiful there.
And again, time after time, you know, you'd love to do all these things in one take, but you rarely do, and he just did it every time.
It's just the way it is. Come, help me finish. We almost...
And now the hammer drops.
You know.
And this is what I loved about this script, too. You guys talk about taking time, but when the hammer drops
then
in this
drops.
Show, the hammer drops, and it doesn't let go.
Right.
Well, that's why this extended, I mean, these shots, if you look at it, it's this extension of, like, it's over. He's walked away. It's the Shane moment. He's actually walked away. But then there's, you know, no, he hasn't. Yeah, and it's 40 minutes in, so it is a little different for us.
Desmond says they're heading for the school. They're coming for the boys, Jack. You got to get them into the shelter. Thomas knows where it is.
How many guns are coming?
Maybe it doesn't. I don't know. You have to hold them up till I get there.
Carl, you need to call the embassy. Get them to send some Marines out here.
I've been trying. I can't get through. Jack, go into my room. You'll find what you need in a locker under my sink. The key's on top of the cupboard.
How far out are you?
Maybe 5 minutes. Jack, don't let them take my kids. Don't let them take the children.
Carl, I won't. Everybody!
And again, I think what's interesting here, Howard, just to talk about that, is that, you know, Jack almost has no choice here. You know, Jack Bauer starts a journey here that he almost has no choice. You know, at this point, he obviously has no choice. He has to help the children.
This is great.
Yeah, this is a great, great moment.
Save your helmets for the parade. They are coming. Two of our boys have already been shot.
The United Nations remains neutral in this matter.
Yeah, great, great moment.
Still want to talk to them? I didn't think so. Why don't you go hide in the shelter with the other children?
And then, actually, there's a wonderful moment here, too, because, you know, this poor guy is, as cowardly as he is probably most of the stance that we would take than to really, you know, do what Jack Bauer does and stand up to these guys.
Let's go, Willie, come on.
You know, and this again, big, big sequence, which, you know, the crew and everyone really...
But there was a retro feel to it, I love, and you only explained it after the fact.
Yeah.
But I think originally there was some kind of M80 carbine
and
John goes, you know, I'm taking this almost anachronistic approach with some dynamite and a Walther. What kind of gun was that?
And it's all around. If you look at everything in Africa, we really tried to keep as low-tech and almost... period-like as possible, and I wanted that contrast from Washington, and so, you know, even if you look at the wardrobe, it could be from the 60s. If you look at the guns, if you look at the vehicles, everything had a real retro feel to it, and everything. I mean, the sets, everything. Just I wanted that to, and it makes it a little harder. You don't have the technology that we have, you know, here in America. Although a place like South Africa obviously does, but still, in our story, I just didn't want that to. I wanted that to really feel the difference.
Was that really dug out, that shelter? Did you guys dig that out?
No, it was just a hole that hole that was just straight down that all these children had to stuff into, and then the actual shelter was
a built set
that we built right there on the in one of the shacks.
Got
just
it.
Right over there. You know, and again, all South African stunt people did a great job. Great job for us.
A really great job.
Yeah, we have a very sort of unique way of doing action. It's not like most shows. It's again, a little more real than most. And so the way they fell down, the way they reacted, all of that, I think they learned it really quickly and did a great job. Yeah, we had a great stunt team there. Stunts and effects. Yeah, and again, I love the dynamite. It's just low-techs it all a little bit. And again, I think when you give your hero... you know, less tools, and he has to, you know, he has to be smarter. He has to figure things out, and we had a problem this day too. We were supposed to do there's an explosion coming up that we were supposed to do, and we had to delay it a day because the wind was so strong that the danger factor sort of went
just
up.
Just trying to control fire.
Yeah, it went up. Went up.
What kind of gun is it, John? Or Kiefer?
That?
Yeah, that you're firing.
That looks like the old Beretta.
Yeah, it looks like a Beretta. It's a small Beretta. But you do get to use another gun coming up, which you said you've never used before.
The AK-47?
The AK-47.
Yeah. Which?
You know, we designed a little piece here that he runs out of ammo and has to use one of their guns. Now, Kiefer, talk about a day like that from an actor's point of view. When really, I mean, that day, it was wall-to-wall. I think you were, you know, you were running and shooting right from the very beginning of the day.
You just have to really stay focused. I mean, it's one of those things where you can plan as long as the actor gets from A to B, you can blow this up, you know, when they're in the middle. But, you know, people slip, people fall, people trip on things.
Right.
All of this stuff was uphill. Roots from trees were in the ground. You just had to really mark your steps. This is one of those days where Stan, who does all the special effects and all the demolition, he and I get very friendly. probably pretty smart to bring him something to eat and make sure he's got coffee and whatever he wants. But when we actually go to shoot it, everything is timed up to the step, and we build in a variety of different signals and calls to call something off. But the great thing about that is I'm obviously not concerned about being shot, but I am concerned about the side of a building
hitting you in the head.
Hitting me in the head or not making it to the mark and then getting burnt or something like that. All of those things naturally help your adrenaline. So that feeds the character that would normally be in this kind of a situation, which would their adrenaline would be through the roof.
But then there also in all of that, there still needs to be performance. And I think that's the interesting thing about what you do. I mean, all the years I've worked with you and all this action, there's still a real person in there. It's not the Superman of action. And I see that, and I like that.
So many times, and this is, you know, and Howard's largely responsible for this. And this is a perfect example. Nothing ever works for him. He can take these two.
Yeah, it's that third guy.
And he's got these two down. Yeah. Hello. And, you know, and so within the action is generally written a consequence that he pays or something that doesn't work or, you know, a bomb that doesn't go off.
Yeah, and again, that fight, if you remember, was one of our hardest mornings. The rain was coming down so hard that day.
Yeah.
But the boys covered it up and were able to
lucky to be working in the canopy of the jungle there because...
Yes, very lucky.
It kept you drier?
Well, it kept us a lot drier, yeah.
Kept us drier once we set it up. But it's very funny because if you looked at all that and all those plants that they ran through were all just potted ferns.
Really?
So even when you're in the jungle of Africa, you still need a fair share of potted plants to put in front and have actors run through. And same thing here. These are all our plants up front. But again, the Greens people there were wonderful because they do this so often. They could really just fill a frame so, so quickly. You know, because a shot like this, you want it specifically in a certain place for the shot. So they were able to do that very, very quickly. And this is the first of our embassy scenes.
Again, John, a level of reality that is, you know.
Well, I mean, these extras, and Kiefer, you worked with some of these, extras there's in a the sequence, scene coming up.
There's a sequence coming up, and I'll explain it. But there was a commitment by these people, extras, that I've never really seen before. There was, and we'll talk about it, there was this one girl who cried every take. During the whole embassy sequence, there's moments where they would have to hit the concrete, and they did it in a rehearsal, and people were like comparing their scrapes and their cuts, and it was like, no, you guys, we don't want you to hurt yourselves, and you couldn't stop them. They wanted it. They were there to make something look real, and I was so taken aback by how earnest they were in wanting to accomplish this thing, and somehow... When you work in the States, an extra will want to accomplish something for you because it's your shot or your film. Here, they were doing this for themselves. It was a very different way of looking at something.
That's an interesting observation. I think you're true. I think that's true. It's very
is it
different.
A function of pride or is it like an orientation?
Yes, absolute pride. I've never seen pride like that. Yeah. And again, you know, there's a lax sort of view of it here in America because we've done it so often. There, it's so unique to them. And any job, there's pride to any job. I think we found that, you know, everywhere we went.
To be needed,
You know, the fact that you had a job was so great. And you know, being an extra is a job and you get paid for it. So they came out to work very hard for 10 hours.
Yeah, and they did.
And they did. And at the end of it all, when you think, wow, it must be so hard on them. At the end of that day, the street day, there was a cheer that went up that was chilling.
Yeah.
They were cheering, you know, for themselves. And we were cheering for them. I mean, they were so happy that they did such a great job.
I'm running out of ways to ask the question.
These are always difficult scenes.
In this sequence, there's something that we kind of came up with, which you had written, but I think we took it farther than you had intended, where he starts to break down and cry.
Oh, Kiefer, that was one of my favorite moments in the whole thing.
And it's all part of the ruse.
Yeah.
But you also get very nervous that you hope... I hope people understand that it's part of the ruse and that he's not just completely breaking down. And John said, I promise you they will.
They will, yeah.
Yeah, and again, you're just looking for something different. You know, at this point now, we've done a lot of these in 7 years on the show. So you're looking for, you know, what it is. And there was also an advantage here, too, that we've had that we've never been able to do before, and that's to really scar up Kiefer's face, to really have him,
you know. Because he didn't have to wear it for a whole year.
That's exactly right. He actually wear these wounds for the next hour of the show, you know, whereas, you know, it's very difficult to do in episode one of
right.
You know,
you'd be saddled
season
with it
seven
for
because you're saddled it for 24 episodes. So, you know, the ear burn was there the whole time. You know, the stitches over the eyes.
It's
I mean,
a great cut of the kids. I didn't, you know, when I'm doing the scene, I didn't realize.
They're hearing
they
you.
They could hear you. Yeah,
yeah that was a great, I love yeah. that.
Yeah, it's wonderful. And then this moment was interesting, too, with the mirror. We actually shot a scene where he went and pulled it off the car, but I like this version better where, you know, you see it at the same time Jack sees it. That's always fun for the audience to be sort of with Jack as opposed to ahead of him. Again, this gentleman did a wonderful job. This is a tough scene with you, Kiefer, and I think he's right there with you. And these days are never easy, are they, Kiefer, when we're doing this? This is some of the hardest things we have to do.
It just takes a lot of energy, and you know, the scene plays over 4 minutes, but it takes 12 hours to shoot. And so you start off with this kind of energy at 8 in the morning, and you better have that same kind of energy
exactly.
at 8 at night. And
took me do you a learn long, to pace yourself? Or
took
do you,
me a long time to figure that out, yeah. Because you would do one side of it and you'd get excited about what you did. You know, if I work for a director, if the director's happy, then we're happy. It was something that, you know, we knew was not going to be easy. Then you kind of start to celebrate a little early. And you end up talking with everybody at lunch. What do you think? Do you think it went well? They say, yeah, okay, good. And then all of a sudden after lunch, you've got to go back. You didn't take a nap. You're, you know, yeah.
It's hard.
That
it's,
took
it's
years
really
to figure
hard.
Out.
It's the hardest thing. And, you know, and people think the action is tough. The action is hard in a way, but really once you block the action out, it's straightforward as to what happens. I think it's much more difficult to do these kind of, you know, high emotion performance scenes for me as a director.
I love that moment.
Yeah, yeah. One of my favorites. There I think you realize he was faking it, if you haven't by then.
But, you know, I think it's – and this was a very subtle thing, but again and again, Jack is sort of brought in and, you know, it here – he's being let go.
He could have walked.
He could have walked.
See, this is the second choice, and that's why I like the build of it. The first one, he really didn't have a choice, but now
you guys
he
actually,
does.
You guys re-choreographed this on
yeah.
This
well, was something we just
normally,
discovered right there.
Normally, it didn't. He needed to save his kids, and we couldn't have him agree to go with him right there.
It was a great.
It was
so
a real time.
He went
yeah.
to go
yeah.
save his kids, and then when he comes around the truck, it gives Jack
I love the
opportunity
Jack. Yeah.
to think about
yeah.
it. It's still the same scene.
Yeah.
We just took the last three lines and put them at the end after this.
You know, and,
but what
you know,
a great benefit, though, because you're, I mean, to me, that this sort of describes some of the partnership of how we work on this show is that we all have this understanding and know what needs to be done and know how to tell the story.
Well, you've also, over the years, given us the ability to do that, which not all sort of producers and writers do with directors and actors. But
well, in locations and buildings and the pacing of how something's yeah. played, they all things inform change. About what needs to come, and we've been really lucky that for us, for like this kind of a moment, it becomes painfully obvious.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, and
especially look at all the things that had to happen.
Right.
In real time, I had to get all these people from that place back to the bus, and it just made more sense. The second Kiefer suggested it, it was like a light bulb. You just went, oh yeah, that's the way to do it. And now there's a hero's entrance to it. Now the decision is so huge on his part to get involved that the visual matches it as opposed to him sitting there all bloody on the ground.
No, this was a huge,
there's this
huge,
great
huge
hero
improved.
Moment of him walking out, you know,
yeah.
you hear his voice first.
I was so happy to see it.
You know, you hear the... See, I love hearing the voice and then seeing him.
Oh,
there
yeah.
he is, it's ready for action. There's just something really interesting about that as opposed to as he's lying on the ground, you know, licking his wounds, he's going, yeah, okay, I'll go with you. This just had a stronger feel to it. You know, like Kiefer says, really nothing changed. It really is the same
dialogue. All of it is just it took just, the last three
it's
lines.
It's amazing how it changes it. You know?
Yeah, it really
amazing.
Does. It's profound.
It
yeah,
it.
Yeah.
And now it has an ending too.
Yep.
It suddenly
yep.
had an ending as opposed to it had an ending,
laying
but we
out.
Still have to get everyone in the bus, you know, because we are a real-time show. You just can't cut to I'm going with you. Cut to they're on the bus.
Every
you
time
to get
I see this
there.
Bus, I keep thinking of. You know, I can't even remember the name of the film, but I expect a tail on it and two big dog ears. That bus just
looks so like it.
Can you call your watchdog off, please?
Agent Vossler. He's a friend of mine. You can let him in.
And again, just seeing those two shots of the bus driving away from that beautifully lush green and then cutting to this again, very white, very monochrome set. I just thought it was so wonderful.
I know that my timing right now must, you know, suck. So thank you.
And this is a house in Pasadena pretending to be Washington, D.C. And I think
this guy is very good. I haven't seen him.
He's wonderful.
He's really wonderful. As John said, a very hard part to play.
Well, yeah, because, you know, the second you start playing with, you know, drug addiction, and you had to deal with it, you know, in year three, the second you start playing with that, it's such a fine line of stepping over that line and it becoming a real character of what that is.
I got to add to that a mouthful of exposition.
Oh, my God. Which probably the biggest exposition scene in the whole movie was right here.
In the whole history of the show, I think.
It was right
what
here.
The hell is this all about?
But what he did so wonderfully was kept it in character.
Yep.
And so, yes, you're getting the information as an audience, but there's still this wonderful game between the two of them.
You're getting everything else from him, too.
You're getting everything else. The fact that he is in trouble, that he is, you know, had a little too many drugs. And
he's telling a story, ultimately. You know, you're really listening. He makes
really
you listen.
He does it in his very first scene, and he's done it all the way through this.
Yeah.
He'll grab his
nose. Yeah, his nose. Just does very subtle. It's very small, very subtle. But, you know,
and then the licking of the teeth.
Yeah, and the smile. And, yeah, it's just a wonderful, wonderful, nuanced performance.
Yeah,
and, again,
good.
He's just one of, you know, he's a guy I've had him, you know, I worked with him on Nikita, La Femme Nikita, back in the day with Joel.
Was he 10?
And so we knew him.
Yeah.
we knew him back then. And I've always had him in mind for the show. We just couldn't find the right part for him.
He's come up a bunch of times.
A couple of times. And when he came in this audition, it's one of those things where you're sitting there all day and, you know, man, there's great young actors, you know, of this age and caliber here in town. And one guy's great and the next guy's great. But then he comes in.
But he's so exquisitely vulnerable,
he comes in
too.
And
he defines the
role.
When a guy
like that comes in, then you go, oh, that's what was written. I get it now. That's it. And he just came in, and there was no doubt.
How about,
you know?
I'm sorry to hear that you're in trouble, Chris, but you're a friend of mine.
Yeah, he just embraced it right away.
And I got to tell you, even Eric, you know, Eric Lively, which is kind of a very hard part, but you get a sense of an overprivileged kid who's kind of had the world handed to him, and it all makes sense. It feels three dimensional.
It was one of my favorite things about this 2 hour that you get to see Eric. Because I think that was always a little bit of a hole in episode one where, you know, you see Colm and Cherry lamenting over their son that died.
Who we never met.
But you see, I think, a picture. And that's, you never really get to meet the guy and see who he is. And this got us to afford, you know, we afforded to do that. And then got to see the girlfriend, which you see later on. So you get to see the relationship.
And again, she was also just absolutely terrific. Her disdain for Chris was, you know. Look at this. I love this look.
Yeah, all these little subtle looks back and forth between all of them. And again, you know, Jim Lapidus with the wardrobe, a very sort of, you know, muted.
Monochromatic.
You know, monochromatic. We really, you know, made an effort to, even the pictures are black and white up on the walls.
Oh, that's great.
We seriously made a real effort to make it that.
Thank you. Just check your email 1 hour.
Clean yourself up, okay?
Great job. The height difference was a bit of a challenge.
16 motor teams supported by 24.
And again, look at the contrast from what you just saw to this. These were shot on our last 2 days, actually. This camp was on our last 2 days.
This is out at the quarry?
It was very disappointing at the time because we had this massive fog, which you can see almost in every shot. That, you know, there's these big cliff faces. It was a quarry, so those big cliff faces that... But somehow or another, now once I got back and I saw it, it created a mood that was undeniably, you know, wonderful for all the scenes there. I don't think it would have been the same if it was sunny and bright.
Because it feels like they're hanging out in the cloud forest and the mountains.
It feels like they're
hidden by the weather.
It's a very hidden, you know, gloomy place, this camp where they're bringing these children and training them. So it actually, I think after all was said and done, I think it worked for us. You know, and all these, you know, day player actors, they were also wonderful. They did such a great job.
He has information about your brother.
What sort of information?
Even the walkie-talkies are low-tech.
Your brother's dead, sir. Your brother and his men, they were ambushed at the American school.
One of the problems we have with the location, too, because it was a quarry, the ground is made out of these, you know, sort of small boulder-type rocks, yeah. Which for sound was a living nightmare, but in essence saved us because it rained so hard for so long, it would have been a giant mud pit if those rocks weren't there. So it actually worked out. And again, some great makeup work there with the local people. That stitch was so realistic. And we shot this green screen on stage. We ran out of time one day. We had very limited light because of the winter hours. So we ended up on stage shooting this on a green screen stage. But I think it worked out well.
Be right back.
And again, another Bobby Kiefer scene. These are all so good.
Oh, hospital soon. He's going to go into shock.
We're 5 kilometers from the city.
Carl, I'm really sorry about the school. I know how much you put into it.
Just a bunch of cement and 2x4s, right? What the hell was I thinking? Letting myself believe that things were finally different here.
Howard, how many rewrites did you do on this? Did it come natural? Did it feel sort of natural?
I got to tell you, I had one of those things that doesn't always happen where I knew the emotional core of this thing. So even though I went through some rewrites, I sort of knew where it had to begin. I knew where it had to end. So it was a process that came easier than
and
most.
And I asked that on that scene because it was the bent in this relationship must have been at the core of it in the very beginning.
Yeah, yeah. It was actually interesting because the Ben and Jack relationship competed with the Willie Jack relationship, and I wasn't sure, you know, how to modulate
that's funny.
But they all complement each other.
Yeah, I think they just did. I never even actually saw them from a director's point of view, competing as something I'd have to watch out for. I think they both had their own world.
But I knew that Benton was not gonna last the whole journey, and that Jack had to inherit Benton's obligation to, you know, these kids, and particularly that kid.
And this is the beginning, of course, of Jack and the 13, 14 children from here on in.
13 to 15? Yeah. 13.
the number, you'll never count them because they were kind of different on different days. But
doubled them up.
Yeah. Well, what I wanted to do is at the camp, I wanted to feel a lot of them there just because it's such a big space. And then we reduced them down once we got it to here. But I think we say there's 14 in the actual script. But there's never any one shot where you can tell how many there are. The other thing I did, too, if you look at the children, is Willie's the only one with stripes on.
That was John.
And again, those are the little tricks you do as a director because you know, obviously after the first half hour, you get to know who Willie is, but you want to know who he is through the whole show. So,
you know, I almost called you. I almost said, you know, that's a little bright, I didn't realize till after the fact what you were doing. And,
yeah, it's always a chance you're taking, but quite honestly, your eye goes to him. Anytime there's a scene with 13 kids, your eye always goes to him because he had that stripe pattern on that no other child had. And here's the scene I was actually speaking of earlier. That didn't make the on-air version, but it's just wonderful. Two great actors. Mm-hmm. And this is the second of the two scenes with them together. Just again, just wonderful.
Master protocols for this.
Cherry makes an interesting choice too. I mean, a female president played by Cherry makes an interesting choice, even just from the way you're writing. I think it's much different than what we've done with like Logan and what we've done with Palmer.
Yeah.
You know, she's well, the president that listens a little more, I think, than we've ever done on our show.
And is it a function of her being a woman? I think you make the association.
I'm not sure you want to say that, but maybe it is. No. You know, I mean, we don't know. We've never had a female president, so it's hard to say. But I know even the way Cherry's playing it, you know, there's in the year in season 7, there's many scenes with her and all these folks around her, and you can tell she's listening to every word.
Yeah.
Well, certainly there are scenes during the season where she has to be decisive.
That's right.
Because she's a woman where a man might have been afforded some more room to move.
Yeah.
Because they're not being questioned for their strength.
That's true. She's had,
as the character, I mean, I've noticed that in the writing, where she's had to be definitive, assertive, more than any other president. president.
Well, she's what's best about in a crisis. She's what's best about both sides of the aisle. She's compassionate and she's strong.
Yes,
I mean,
that's
and she's
true.
Sort of able to draw from both sides.
You know, because I think you know the president's played by Powers and obviously Greg Gitson. They didn't listen. I mean, they, you know,
right.
They had advisors around them, you know, and you could tell that they were just waiting for people to finish so they can say, no, this is what we're going to do, as opposed to Cherry, who really, you can see her absorbing every word and then processing it all,
mm-hmm.
you know, putting it all together and then making her decision. But once she made that decision, it was strong, but you could see the process, which I've, you know, I didn't see from these guys. They were stronger, you right. know, which is interesting.
I believe there's a simple answer to that question.
God, this was such a great scene.
You are right. Nothing about this job, Lens.
Yeah, what's wonderful in the scene that after all is said and done, he has some great advice for her.
Parts. Most you won't even see coming till they've smacked you in the head. So.
Look, feel free to write a 2-hour and give me this cast anytime. Anytime.
Careful.
Yeah, he was wonderful there.
Yeah, just look at the subtlety. See at the
inauguration. Well, it's a trademark 24 idea that there's something that's not being fully disclosed.
Yeah, and there's a lot in this 2-hour that lives in that world.
Yeah.
That other layer that, you know,
particularly
just below
in the Washington
particularly
story.
In the Washington story. God, look at her face. It's just so great. And again, these are all wonderful sets built by our crew and Joseph Hodges, production designer, has built us the White House, basically, in parts and pieces.
He should have brought me in on the decision.
Maybe he's still bitter about the election.
I know what Daniels isn't that vindictive.
You think he has a reason for pulling out of Sangala before you take office?
Maybe.
And again, the great thing about this scene is that you really see how she inherited this problem.
Right.
As opposed to something she got into herself when you're into season 7, is that, you know, if she had a druthers, she would have played it completely differently than what Powers did as the president. And so he sort of forced her into the situation she's in.
Along the river would be their fastest route.
Good. Colonel Nabaku, I am sorry to hear about your brother, but I need you.
And look out for both Tony Todd, who plays Juma, and Hakeem in season 7. They both have big parts coming up.
After we have taken power.
And again, Hakeem is so strong. And a bit of a movie star in South Africa where we were.
More like a rock star.
A rock star, actually.
Really?
Yeah.
It's like Kiefer who?
he took a large group from the crew to the townships, to their version of a club or a party, which was outdoors. And apparently it was one of the greatest days everybody had. And everyone remarked on, you know, just how popular he is.
Oh, there were people banging on the window of the car before we actually parked. You know, and the funny thing is, in Africa, everyone talked to him, and we kept thinking they were his relatives and people that he knew. Mm-hmm. But you just realize they just—he
was just a rock.
Yeah, after the first 100,
you know, yeah,
then
exactly.
You realize
we started realizing,
family.
No, this is the way people just talk to him. He's just got this. It's very different than what happens here in America. It's like there's just, you know, he's just, hey, you're one of us. You're, you know, we're pals. So it was very fun to watch.
I love this set too, John.
Yeah, this was just a loft here in L.A. That was just a great location. We had to be careful because when you looked out the windows, Washington D.C. has a height restriction in their buildings. None of them can be taller than the Capitol, I believe, is the one place. So they only have everything's only about 10 stories, 11 stories high. They don't have the big 20-story towers that we have here
right.
in L.A. So even looking out the window, I had to make sure that it was at an angle that you can see them out there. Maybe if you count it, they're probably a little taller, but Washington, D.C. is very much one height. You don't have the giant towers like you have here in L.A. And again, Chris, just a wonderful job. And this kind of stuff is fun to do. It's a little horror film kind of tension that's always interesting. And even
again, this is the real, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, just staying on the loft, I just wanted to be very different than Roger. Roger had the very conservative, you know, type place. And, you know, he's just a little more modern, a little more hip. You know, he's doing the clubs and he's enjoying his money a little differently than the way Roger is, even though they're contemporaries. So I wanted to look very different.
I got
different.
That. Yeah. I did.
They're not all arbitrary.
But I think
some of them have thought behind them.
I think this is where real time, you know, just really.
Yeah.
Just all.
Yeah. And these are the scenes I get really worried about, because this is the kind of scene where you go, boy,
in
that
for
took
dime,
a lot
for
of time.
Yeah.
And let's cut it out. But, you know, you have to watch him walk all the way and come back. That's what makes this moment great.
Work.
That, you know, suddenly there's a guy sitting there. And these two gentlemen, I think the idea of them, the way you wrote them, was very, very different for us. I mean, they're, you know, almost these accounts.
They're more threatening, yeah.
Yeah, they're more threatening in their simplicity and their nonviolent sort of manner than they are, than most of our you know, villains. And again, it's interesting because you have no idea where it's going.
Right.
You have no idea who they are.
But you're feeling
going,
you're so in
you
his
know
shoes.
That you're in his shoes.
Did you make any hard copies?
No, I swear. I barely even looked at those files.
Again, a great performance on Chris's part. Yeah.
But and the other and the
yeah.
other actors.
Yeah, the other actor is wonderful too.
Like, what do I do now?
The fact the gun was just sitting there, no one's pointing it at him. It, you know, it's fun. It's fun to kind of do these kind of things because we do so much of this on the show that it was really interesting to do something really different for us. And this, I mean, the fact that he's sitting with a newspaper is just great. You know, which was nothing we added. It was actually written that way. And what I loved about it was, if you think about it, two guys at this level, you know, they don't really need more than a newspaper to deal with a kid like
right.
this. You know, they know that when it's time to deal with Jack Bauer in the FBI, it's different. But with this kid, you
know. I don't know if you're lying.
Yeah, just wonderful.
Chris asked me not to tell anyone.
I.
And this was a bit of a challenge when we saw it in the script. You want us to do the inauguration? Really, Howard?
Boy, have you seen the effects?
Yeah, they're really good.
They're fantastic.
Yeah, they're great. But again, it gets very difficult to then, you know, we found this building that you see in the background is at the Huntington Library in Pasadena. So it just had the right kind of look for us for Washington, D.C. There's a little too much greenery around, but, you know, we get away with it, I think. And then we did a little bit of a CGI Capitol on top of it. But again, the architecture is what's important, and you just don't want your audience to be out of it. You just want them to believe that they're there. And I think they worked. And there you see the Capitol behind it. And again, laying the seeds of another mystery and another character you get to see later on in the piece. What's our exposure? Unclear. You know, now I'm thinking it's essential to watch this before you watch season 7.
Yeah.
Tell your friends.
I don't think it's essential, but I think it helps.
It really helps. A lot of these characters you're going to see again. So I think it really does help. It does hold up as a 2-hour, but it'll really help to see. Kiefer, this was a cool location.
Yeah, this is beautiful.
Yeah, really, really quite beautiful. And again, I love the serenity that eventually gets destroyed. It's always sort of a theme that ran through all of this.
Stay close to me. Jack. There's a road.
Once again.
And he has a
Benton's
choice.
Giving him.
Yeah. And it's interesting because I think Jack would have walked away. I mean, he did.
Oh, yeah.
He walked away.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, he felt that they were safe enough to walk away. He would have been that close to not being, you know, brought back.
Yeah. Take care of yourself, Carly.
It's a great moment. Again, I think those are scenes to me, Kiefer, that feels like it's two people that know each other more than mm-hmm. just two characters in a show.
Carl.
And I love this moment because I love playing all those moments where these guys are so trained that they know right away. Without words, they know that there's a problem. They hear something coming. They don't know where it's coming from.
This moment coming up is one of my favorites too, when the kid slips.
Yeah, again, you added, you know, you on the day, that's something we added because it was more about how quickly they could get into the forest. And so, you know, that gave us the delay we needed. The other thing I liked too was adding the fact that Bobby pulled his gun out and was protecting Jack, which was nice. It's just, again, those subtle moments, but it's two guys that, you know, have lived in this world and know how to react right away. And you wanted to see Bobby do some of that. And Bobby told me at the time, he hasn't done a lot of that in his career.
Oh, really?
I think it might have been one of the first times he shot a gun.
No, those Scottish actors, they break the bottle and stick it in your eye.
Exactly. I said, it's not like you haven't punched guys out before. Oh, hell no, I've done a lot of that. But you know, he has, in his career, he just didn't play a lot of those parts.
Thomas, give me the gun. I got a shot. Roll them out.
You know, and again, here they are, you know, working as a team. It's one thing to say they are, but it's another to see it. And I just find it more interesting. And then this was all this work inside the helicopter we shot back here in L.A. Because we were supposed to shoot that the same day we shot the camp. And the helicopters couldn't fly. They wouldn't let them go in the air because of fog.
Yeah, it's the first time
fog
we've
was
had
so
a,
thick.
Had a helicopter, you know, call out. Made
that's
it.
Right. And, this day here, we had the wind. It was, the wind blew the exhaust back into the engine
and
stalled an engine.
Make an emergency landing.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It was both Nick Hextall, who's our assistant director from England, who did a wonderful job. He said he's been in the business a long time. He's never heard Mayday, Mayday come from a helicopter. And so that was a bit scary, but he landed and everything was fine. And this was another scene that, you know, lots of discussions, I think, Howard, how to play this and make it real and how to sell it and set it up. And you know, again, just difficult from a blocking point of view to make it all
work. That
was
one where I honestly didn't know how you were going to do it.
It's all the insert work. And these mines are actually, I mean, as strange as they look, they're totally authentic. It's exactly what they look like, you know, researched by our prop department.
Stay there. Don't move. Don't come near me.
I don't want to leave this.
I know.
You know, and again, it's such an impossible situation that they're in.
Go with Thomas.
Willie, it's all right. Come with me. Slowly, slowly. Stay on the path. Go with the other boys. Go.
Forget it, Jack. Just go. Take the kids and go.
I love the children just standing out there in that group like that.
Well, this is a tricky thing, too, obviously, knowing who knows what. And
yeah.
Well, you have to remember, all these kids have been fighters. They know everything that's happening right now. They've all been soldiers, so.
But they don't quite know what's going on, and because for the next scene to work, remember?
Oh, as far as Sia,
kill switch, she's coming, find it.
There's no time, Jack. Stop.
Just give me a second.
Jack, stop.
Yeah, they don't know what the eventual outcome is going to be to poor Bobby. And this is just...
Oh,
you know,
and he plays it so beautifully.
Probably one of the most... Bobby, unbelievable. I think I agree with you, Kiefer. I think he's one of the best actors working today. Yeah. He's just so good.
Show this safe. Carl, don't do this. Take these papers. Sponsorship papers. Give them the trouble. Please, Jack. Please.
I remember when I finally had to say Tremel's name. I thought that was just Bobby's accent. He was saying it perfectly. And then I kept saying Tremel. And, yeah, and he corrected me.
Well, again, he's actually, you know, again, wonderful job, but he's putting on this accent. This is not his natural Scottish accent, because his natural Scottish accent...
No, the only time we understood him was when he was doing dialogue.
When he was doing dialogue. Because it's closer to what he did in Trainspotting, I think. It's that such a thick accent that you're just kind of straining to hear. So the accent he's putting on is just a cleaner, you know, just a little more acceptable, I think, to an American
ears.
Audience.
Yeah.
American ears, as opposed to that really Yeah, it's funny because he'd be in performance and then you'd call cut and he'd go to talk to you and you'd go, oh, yeah.
Dude, I think it was, I think that date was great.
That's right. Then you'd go, oh, yeah, that's the accent. And I think we even toyed with an American accent too. But
which he did beautifully.
Which he did. He did a
wonderful
job. I
love the international sense of.
But I think that's what we all agreed on eventually was the international feel to it. It just gave it another layer, which was great.
Well, and just that these guys that are specialists like this, that's how they work in the world, and they work with each other.
And they blend
there in. Are guys, you know, it's no different than the CIA. There's guys in the CIA who are working with MI5, who are working with the Israelis, who are, you know.
Sure.
And I just love that we were able to do that with him.
I just kept telling people, he sounds like a cop in New York. It's like that slight Irish, Scottish cop in New York.
Since when do you start giving orders?
I spoke to Udo.
This was one of those scenes at the end of the day when the sun is going down and you just point the camera to wherever the sun is the most beautiful and happened to be in this forest, and it's gorgeous.
Well, and there's a really unique thing that Rodney explained to me, our cinematographer, about shooting in South Africa at this time of year. It is so deep in the southern hemisphere that the sun never fully rises. So it never, like, we get in a lot of trouble here sometimes because the sun is directly above us, whereas because of the curvature of the earth and where it is centered off, obviously, to the sun, it never fully gets above you. It kind of goes around you.
Oh, that's so interesting.
And so it's a real magic light.
All the time.
Yeah, so you always have that rib.
You never have the direct light.
Yeah.
Which is why some of this stuff has always feels so warm.
Rich, And then we also, you know, because we were there in the winter, we had very short days. So, you know, we didn't even have the 12-hour days that you usually have when you shoot. It was more like 8 to 10. It depends on, you know, where we were and when we started. And so, you know, at the end of every day, Rodney was doing a little dance, trying to get everyone moving because the sun was going down and we had no way around it.
Where is he?
I don't know what you're talking
about. Again, this is great.
I know this is a hard thing to sell, John.
Yeah,
have someone get shot.
It was tough, but again, you know, again, this is one of the scenes where you need some insert work. You need to see the foot. You need to see everything he's doing. And you know what he's doing. I know you realize that, you know, and the way he pulls him in. I love his, you know, his mumbling.
The best mumbling.
It's great. I know you're like, really, you do it. You actually lean towards the TV trying to strain to hear what he says. You know, then you realize his face changes completely and realize what he's done. And this is really interesting, Kiefer, because in post, we kind of went back and forth. There was like a little explosion we did on the foot, and we realized you just couldn't do it because we didn't want to take away from that one little moment where you realize it was just so much stronger than seeing an explosion or seeing anything. Was that realization? And
well,
if you remember right, this was at the end of the day.
That works solely if the friendship is established
exactly.
And works, and that it really matters.
You know, and this was tough. This was at the very end of the day, but it was just, Kiefer, on your part, just amazing work.
Well, thanks. It was nighttime when we shot that. It was very odd
on the
for
back
me.
To us.
It was very odd for me to see the POV looking out
the
over
kids,
the town
yeah.
and seeing it day.
Yeah.
Because it was pitch black. I mean, it was nighttime.
We actually shot the kids. We had sent a second unit to go shoot the kids coming over that ridge. And when we shot that scene, it was really the end of the day. And Rodney was pulling his hair out, making the jungle in the background look like it was day. I think he did a great job. I mean, you don't even think about it.
Expecting a call?
Hmm?
It's about Chris, isn't it?
You're supposed to send me something 15 minutes ago.
Call him later. Your mother's here.
And again, it's not jarring to go back and forth. That was my biggest worry, that it was going to be such a drastic difference between, you know, and we've never done that on the show. I mean, we've had, you know, storylines, Washington and obviously Jack's storylines, but they're in the same city
right.
and they kind of, you know, they flow the same. This was such a jarring difference that it really scared me that it was going to be jarring.
Well,
a bit.
Which is why, as I'm watching it for the first time, why I think you were really clever to embrace that difference visually.
Yes, that's what I had to do.
And make a statement with it. There's at some point you have to look at the storm and realize, do I run away from it or do I run straight into the and find the eye of it?
Yeah.
And this was kind of running straight into the eye of it and going,
I mean, yeah, undeniably, the change was going to be so different, especially once we decided to shoot in Africa, that I had to go full bore right into it. But look at, I mean, there's just, we put a little color on Samantha, but otherwise it's just so monochrome. And this was the day you were talking about, Kiefer, when you came to visit John.
This was 110 degrees out.
Yeah, 110. This was the first scene that John did for us. But right away I knew. It was an instinct that he grabbed with this character. That was so good.
If he finds Nichols, he can find me.
Not without evidence.
You know, and I love the way that, you know, he just looks at him at the very end.
Sir, Whitley's no longer a problem. We limited the damage.
But you haven't eliminated it.
Yeah, he's pretty strong. It sets him up pretty well for the rest of the year.
That smile.
Yeah. Then look at that. Look at the contrast. And this, I think, Kiefer, we both can say is probably one of the most spectacular days of our lives.
This was what made me just fall in love with these people and these extras, their commitment to making something work and the pride in the work that they were doing for themselves. It was just, well, you'll see it. It's very few times have I been in the middle of a sequence where I was scared about what I was watching happen in front of me and how these people were diving for cover.
Yeah, it was spectacular. And I remember it shocked us all because we did a rehearsal, because usually you do a rehearsal on something like that, and what usually has to happen, you have to go in and say, no, do you mind going down on one knee and making it look like you're in trouble?
Right.
You know, because people don't want to get hurt, and they shouldn't be because they're not stunt people. But we did one rehearsal, and in the very first rehearsal, everyone hit the dirt. And, like, I mean hit the dirt. And we're crawling, and they had a scream.
He's so good right here.
Yeah, he's wonderful. They did a yell that was I can't even duplicate it. It was so amazing. I think some of it stays in the soundtrack. And then we knew right away. We thought, oh, this is going to be spectacular.
And this guy that's coming up was amazing, too. He has such a look.
Yeah, he had a great look.
He looks like David Palmer's back from the dead.
Look at that.
There's a moment.
Yeah, he does look a little David Palmer-like.
I didn't.
If you have to squint. Again, just bumping into that woman, I just think is so great. Listen to them. I mean, you could hear their voices in the...
This really is spectacular. It's so real.
Look at that.
And they're just,
that's
falling. And this is concrete. There's nothing.
Look at them hiding.
You know?
I mean, just watch what's happening. Look in the background.
And like that woman just going down there. Yeah. It's
an older woman. I mean, you know, a woman in their 60s diving for cover.
But not one person is laughing or not a part of it. Or it's just...
You know, and once again, this is all day. We did this.
Yeah.
This is not a sequence you shoot quickly in one shot. This is a whole day of shooting that they're there.
Kill the cockroach.
Don't want to hurt you. Just put the gun down.
Willie, wait, Willie.
I know you're scared. Just
again, this was a really tough sequence and just scary in what could happen. You know, and the thought process of what would Jack do if he had to, because this is a soldier. I mean, he's a child, but quite honestly, he's got a gun in his hand. And
just put the gun down. Come on, just like me.
But Kiefer, this was great. I think this was the brilliant part that Kiefer threw in, this gun going down.
The gun down, yeah.
Because we always had a problem with what the ending could be, what you could say to this child to have him, you know, drop the gun.
Come on, Jack. We have to go. We have to go now.
Boys, go over now. Come on. Let's go.
And again, I think it plays right into the theme of, you know, one child for 14.
I mean,
if he had to, would he trade that off? I mean, he'd have to. It's awful to think about, but, you know, that's what's happening there. And then again, that day, Kiefer, was, you know, this was probably the second most spectacular day at
the
embassy.
Well, this was amazing, and there's all the extras up here. I mean, and they really pushed each other and...
Oh, they were screaming.
Was,
the ones it, right at the fence.
And it was hurting. And, but it's great for an actor because I walked through this and you just feel like it's real thing.
Yeah. Actually, this part of you
that
coming
girl
through,
right there,
yeah, that
woman
was
crying.
She was amazing.
Every take.
Every take.
For 10 hours.
Yeah.
She was just amazing.
Actually, some of the American crew said to me, oh, those people you put up front that are crying are really fantastic. And I said, we didn't put anybody up front. We
just, yeah, they just
those
got there.
People that just happened to be there. Look at them all. They're just amazing. It's not like we auditioned and said the best people come up front. They were, all of them were like that. And that shot key for you coming through was so real. That stuff is, people don't realize how hard that is to do because the camera has to go through first, which creates this massive hole.
Close up after it.
And you have to teach them to close up in a way that looks natural. And you saw that. It's amazing. And, you know, again, because we access and budget, we only had the one helicopter, but we kept cutting it in a way that it landed, took off. It really felt like there was, you know, a fleet of helicopters leaving.
All of them are R1 status. One of them needs urgent medical care.
And Kiefer virtually had to shout. Kiefer, you have to shout here, because I think we did a couple of takes with the people really
screaming.
Really
and, it's such a long take that if you scream that loud and have that much dialogue, reminded me of when I was a kid and I used to play the trumpet and I would kind of halfway through the Saints Come Marching In, I would pass out.
Because of the breathing?
I remember, because of the breathing, because you're excited, you're all of this, and you don't regulate it. And I got really kind of pumped up for in the middle of the sequence, and by the end of it, I was all lightheaded and like, okay, don't make that mistake again.
Yeah, this is tough. It's a tough one to do over and over again. It's really hard when it's at this level. And then I think,
I'm always going to get the Saints Come Marching In vision in my head.
anytime there's a scene that Jack Bauer has to shout. But again, Gil, I think, and this was so
important. And Gil was great here.
Because he made it personal at some point, which I think that's what makes it really
interesting.
He made
it personal when he looked at the car.
That's exactly it. Right there, it wasn't just about getting Jack back because the government wanted him back. It was like...
And there's one take, and I don't know if you used it or not because you could barely see him as he's driving out of the camp after we have our first initial meeting. He said, I hope I didn't upset you and John. And I went, why? And he went, well, because I was flipping you off. The whole drive by, when he's leaving, he's like this.
Oh, that's funny.
Looking out the window, and it was right under the mirrored part of the window.
Oh, that's very funny.
Kiefer, this moment that you added, and John,
wow, this
is
Kiefer.
Terrific.
It's a great moment. Again, it's interesting, Kiefer. You have such instincts that are so right. And that moment we're talking about, because we just kind of glossed over it, was the fact that, you know, Gil says, no, you first, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because he suspects that if he lets the kids in, Jack will take off. And that's, again, it was a Kiefer ad that was just perfect. And then it gave us the ability to do this, Kiefer, which was great. Watching every kid go through.
And not all of them.
You know, not they stopped one. And it was just, it's great. It's almost screaming out, we'd love to save all of them in Africa, but we can't.
Yeah.
You know?
And Thomas being the one who brings up the rear.
Well, and it was getting Thomas through, too, just because he looked like an adult.
Right.
There's that Gil moment, that little smirk. It's not even a smile. It's just a little smirk, the victory smirk.
You know, and the interesting thing is we're talking about this and we haven't completely finished season 7.
Yeah.
You know, I certainly advocate, you've got to let him beat his ass.
Because he beat you, really.
That'll be the post quill.
The post quill?
Yeah.
3 minutes.
a special, a mobile phone version where he just beats up Gil. And again, this was a challenge because, you know, what we try to do here on 24, when the writer's right, we want to do the inauguration. We don't go screaming into the night going, how the hell are we going to do that? We try to figure it out.
Looks great.
And we built this set. I mean, we built that. We virtually just went to a high school stadium and built that set and put the had the people up in the bleachers. And then we were able to do a little CG work around it, but almost, the majority of what you see is real. And it totally worked. I don't think you even question it. And then I think it's really wonderful the way it all comes to a head in this last scene, Howard, the way all of it through her speech, then, you mix the two. And it's the first time in the show you do that. You've always lived in Africa and you've lived in Washington. And for the first time, they come together on the screen at the same time. And that's something actually I didn't even have in mind. That's something the editors, Scotty, actually, our editor, put in. And I just loved the second I saw it, I knew it was.
Well, it was always kind of be a Godfather-esque counterpoint.
Exactly right. Yeah. you know, suddenly you see everybody on the same screen just became so powerful.
Its light doesn't always shine as brightly as it should.
You know, the kids are still training out there somewhere.
And Cherry just killed us. She's...
Yeah, she was wonderful because it was such a long speech. We actually put it on a teleprompter like the real president would have with the shields up that she could read from. And I remember going up and saying, we have the speech on the teleprompter. And she said, are you kidding me? This is my inauguration speech. I'm the president of the United States. I haven't slept for 2 weeks just thinking about this.
Oh, that's
great. She goes,
great.
Trust me, you're not going to need it.
That's great.
And sure enough, I don't even think we turned it on. She was just so into it.
We all share the responsibility history has placed
just
in our
wonderful.
Hands. The future. Our future. Depends on it.
And again, even that day, I'm sitting there looking on that stage, and I look at Cherry Jones and John Voight and Colin Feore and Peter McNichol. I'm thinking, what lucky director. And this
moment
was unbelievable.
Well,
you were in the chopper, right, when this was happening. We didn't rehearse this. We barely explained what we wanted from them. And they, again, I can't even explain how wonderful it is that they just rose up to it. That's it, folks. There's our 2 hours. And that was an interesting choice, too, Key, for that little smile at the end.
Cool.
Thanks for watching. Thank you.
Thank you.